Yeah, this is called Weaponized, from the place of Weaponized. It's sources, bodies, debris, the lost tapes of UFO whistleblower Cole Corso. Right, hope you enjoy. Get something out of this one. Hooly dooly.
But anyway, that's another story.
And all the material disappeared.
The saucer itself.
Secrets, cover-ups, and strange phenomena.
UFOs and ideas that challenge reality itself. All these mysteries, all this time. Are we ever going to get to the bottom of these?
My name is George Knapp. I dig into news stories that others can't or won't.
I'm Jeremy Corbell, and for some reason, people tell me things they probably shouldn't. And this is Weaponized.
This is Weaponized, Jeremy. Long time no see.
Yeah, nice to be in the studio, man. Good to see you.
So 2023 might be remembered as the year that stories about reverse engineering and crash saucers went from folklore to a front burner issue because of a testimony under oath of David Grush. We know that there are other witnesses who've come forward, spoke to Grush. The information has been transmitted to the Department of Defense, to the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community. There's a lot of heft behind this story about crash saucers, reverse engineering, stories that we heard from Bob Lazar long, long ago. But that is not the first time this stuff has come up before. So I thought we might talk about today about Colonel Philip Corso.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have a very unique, and I'm glad our audience gets to hear this from you. You know, you've kind of been at the forefront of everything, man, recording people before they were known in public. So, of course, you broke the Bob Lazar story, our friend Bob. You know, you broke that story in Silhouette, talking about reverse engineering. But Philip Corso, now this is a really serious military guy that really came to you before he was ever public, before he wrote his book Day After Roswell, which is real famous now. And he had some pretty astounding claims. But who was he personally? He was a real military guy.
Real guy. So 1992, I had taken some leave away from Channel 8, KLAS, to work on a series of UFO documentaries. UFO is the best evidence, which we hope would become a long-running series, just didn't work out that way. But I get a call from a colleague of mine named Mark Sauter. He was a reporter for Cairo in Seattle. And the reason we knew each other is we were both working on stories about POWs that had been left behind in Vietnam and in Korea. And Mark Sauter was aware that I had an interest in that issue. He had gained testimony from a guy named Colonel Philip Corso. Corso appeared before a Senate committee and told them that hundreds of Americans, soldiers, had been left behind, abandoned in Korea. And it was highly controversial testimony at the time, but in the years that followed, it proved to be pretty much true. I think he also said the same thing about Vietnam. But along with that conversation with my friend Mark Sauter, he told this other story about UFOs, crashed saucers, Roswell. And Mark thought, well, that's my bailiwick. So he called me up and told me about it. And I reached out to Corso. And we struck up a friendship and had multiple long-term conversations on the phone about what he knew. And he told me this incredible story that he had seen the Roswell wreckage, that he had seen an alien body, that you know, that he had, as part of his official duties for the U.S. Army, seeded private companies and labs with alien technology to give them a little boost in producing what we now know is really dramatic high-tech instruments and technology. So I thought, wow, that's a pretty wild story. I said, would you be interested in telling that story on camera? Would you come out to Las Vegas? And he said, yeah. And for a while, he wanted me to write his book. He thought I was the guy to write the book that eventually became The Day After Roswell. We bought him a ticket, round trip, non-refundable for some reason. And the day before he's supposed to come out, I get a call from a guy who turned out to be his new agent, who said, we're not coming. We're doing something else. We're going in a different direction. And that was a big disappointment. But it wasn't the end of the road with Colonel Corso. Flash forward 4 years later, 1996, Robert Bigelow has created something called NIDS, the National Institute for Discovery Science. I was sort of a consultant, a friend of Bigelow's, and also a consultant to them. And they were looking for ideas on things to do. This is before Bigelow bought what we now know as Skinwalker Ranch. So it occurred to me, as they're looking for projects to investigate, I do this guy, Philip Corso. Enough time has gone by, water under the bridge. I knew the 50th anniversary of Roswell was coming, and the book that I was originally asked to write was probably in production. So I just reached out to him and called him up, and he talked to me again. And I said, I'm working with some guys, including some ex-government intelligence folks, and they're interested in your story. Can we come and see you? And he said, yeah. He lived in Jupiter, Florida, I think, or a little town outside of Jupiter, Florida. So Bigelow gives us his jet. John Alexander and I jump on a plane with another NIDS guy. We stop in Austin, Texas, picked up a fellow named Dr. Hal Putoff, and flew on to Florida and spent some time with Corso. Over a couple of days, we go to his house, and Corso did not want his family to overhear what he was going to say, because I guess apparently it was kind of sensitive with them, and they didn't want him spilling all the beans to some outsiders before the book came out. So we all went outside into an RV and sat there for multiple hours, and he told this story. And I brought along a little camera. I am not a talented photographer like you, Jeremy, but I did my best to record this story that he told. And I thought, you know, this is footage that most of which has not been seen, so I thought we could play some of it.
Yeah, and so this is the first time that he has gone on camera, and you back in the day were able to get this interview. So let's just back up a second. So sure. Philip Corso, it sounds to me like he was a military whistleblower about prisoners of war, and he testified to Congress?
Yes.
So look, you got a guy who's already like a whistleblower. He's like, no, I'm going to tell the truth about something in a rough situation. Then he tells you all the stuff about UFOs. Now, the core that I know of his claims was that reverse engineering programs were indeed going on, that we got what we call derivative technologies. So there are certain things from UFO exploitation or reverse engineering programs that were seeded into private industry. Of course, he took credit for seeding it.
Yeah.
But whether that's true or not, his basic premise was that things like, particle beam technology, I remember something to do with capacitors, I remember even Kevlar, he said, all of this stuff, fiber optics, was a result of reverse engineering on UFOs. It's very strange because now we're sitting in a world where it's much more possible to understand that we are reverse engineering UFOs. We have been for a long time. So it rings true to some degree that there would be derivative technologies. Mm-hmm. Maybe Colonel Corso was telling us the truth all as a whistleblower all the way back then. What's your gut on that?
I think he was telling the truth as he knows it. And I think that probably they did do a seeding operation and put this out there. Now, of course, the industries that are based on these multi-million dollar technologies and businesses, they all deny it. They said, no, we did it all on our own. And of course, you could probably, their case is pretty strong that they figured it out on their own. But I suspect that if they had something that seeded it and started them off down this road, they wouldn't admit it, that it came from somewhere else. But Colonel Corso was a real guy. I know a lot of people found his story about this technology and its original source to be hard to believe. But I know in the course of NIDS investigating his background, they found out he was a real guy who really had these amazing jobs and was a high-level trusted intelligence officer who had done some amazing things, had won high awards, had worked very closely with, during the Korean War, he worked for General MacArthur, who was the commander of the forces there. In World War II, he had been an intelligence chief in Rome and had helped sort of govern the country of Italy after World War II. He rescued something like 10,000 Jews, got them out of Rome and to Palestine, which is the newly created Jewish state. And he did a lot of amazing things. And in, I think it's 1961?
Yeah, foreign.
1961, he becomes chief of what they called the Foreign Technology Division for the Department of Defense. And boy, we didn't know how foreign this technology really was. But he said there was a file cabinet there that had crash retrieval materials from Roswell.
Yeah. So when people say, Foreign Technologies Division of the Pentagon, of development, that's like anything foreign to us, right? So it could be a Russian spy plane. It could be something more exotic. But this is a guy in position to know. It's a guy in position to have his hands on this stuff. I found it also interesting that around his work, there was, who is it? Admiral, starts with an H, his name. He was first.
Hillenkoetter.
Hillenkoetter. First head of the CIA was always rumored to be part of this as well. Somebody that he worked with. So it's like when you look at somebody's past through the lens of today, it's much more plausible that what he said in his book, The After Roswell, is true. That there are these developments that were gleaned from the reverse engineering of UFOs. So, man, that's what's so kind of incredible about the hearings that just happened with with David Gresh and Commander Fravor and Lieutenant Graves, was that really opened a Pandora's box where now we have some questions we need answers to. Is it true what David Gresh said? Is it true that there are these exploitation programs, not only of hardware, but of biologicals? I mean, that's the number one question. Who has it hands on? You and I have talked to people who are currently working in agencies that claim to have these experiences, hands-on experiences. I mean, we are so close to getting that truth. I hope it can be public.
Yeah, well, Corso, again, his career is documentable. It's not like he is a mystery man whose career path can't be documented. He's a real guy who had these amazing positions. As an intelligence officer, he had a distinguished career. He worked under MacArthur. He worked under this General Arthur Trudeau, who was the boss of that technology division in the Pentagon. Foreign technology is also the term that Wright-Patterson has always used for their secret projects there, which is kind of an interesting coincidence. But so Corso really did have these jobs. And the case he makes in his book, The Day After Roswell, which didn't come out until 97, the 50th anniversary of the crash, is a pretty strong one. And so we recorded an interview with him there in that RV in Florida, and I thought we could play a little bit of that, and then we'll get into some other things. The following is an interview with Philip J. Corso, recorded in 1996 in Florida.
You say you also had reports on bodies, on alien bodies?
That came from Walter Reed.
Were they pretty, I mean, they definitely said not that these were genetic humans or
no,
something.
No, here's what, the report, the thing that I was mostly interested in the report was the two lobes in the brain. There are two lobes there.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie showed part of that. They didn't know what they had, though.
Right.
There were two lobes in the brain, and they're connected. And also, the lid, that's where I got the information on the extra lid, extra eyelid. And we figured that extra eyelid was nothing more than something like our night viewing device. You know, filtered light.
Mm-hmm. Did the actual autopsies get done at Walter Reed?
They did this particular autopsy, the paper that I had.
Physically at Walter Reed?
I don't know if it done physically there or not. I couldn't tell you.
Okay. But the report came out of Walter Reed.
The report came out at our laboratory. We financed that laboratory. There was a crash at the plane of St. Augustine.
At the same time as Roswell,
yeah.
Or later? Or?
Later. No, about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the fiber optics came from there. And there was that one little crash there had an opening. And there was bodies there, too.
Mm-hmm.
St. Augustine was gobbled up in a hurry. Later, something mysterious happened. It disappeared. But anyway, that's another story.
And all the material disappeared?
The saucer itself. But anyway, that's...
Let me add.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, did you have...
Well, they come and take it back, or was it traded back?
There was supposed to be a foreign explosion, but since it didn't exist, nobody could talk about it. You know, one of our greatest colors, I say, was the policy that says that UFOs didn't exist. If ever it didn't exist, there was no crash. If there was no crash, there was no material. Nobody can investigate us because there was no such thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we played that up. We moved that ahead.
But
the more the debunkers screamed, the more better we liked it. They're doing the disinformation for us.
I got a question. I don't know if you remember this or not, but did Colonel Corso ever talk about bodies from the Roswell crash?
He did. He told me a story that he had seen a body. I'm trying to remember where it was. Fort Riley, Kansas, maybe? That it was in a hangar. And I'm trying to remember it. I haven't seen this material in a while, but I think it was at Fort Riley, Kansas, in a hangar there is where he saw an alien body. He also told a story about being at White Sands, New Mexico, at that base, and being out in the desert and meeting an alien, and a live alien in a cave, who gave him a message, something to the effect of, you know, it's a new world if you can take it or if you can keep it, something like that. We should probably go to that clip and see if I can find where he recounted that story personally.
Yeah.
They must have been afraid of our radars because my encounter in that gold mine was so...
Shit, man.
Would you shut your radars down?
Tell me about that again. It was noisy last night.
Stupidly, I made the answer. What's in it? What do you offer? I suppose in human terms, give me something if you want me to do something, right? And I said that in subhuman, so I didn't say what I do offer. I said, what do you offer? I didn't say, what do you give me or what do I trade?
Sure. So what was the answer?
A new world if you can take it.
You can take it.
What's he mean by that?
Yeah.
I don't know for sure. Uh-huh. Did he mean if we can take it, is it too much for us? Or can we take it back? And here's what it looked like. This is red. Now, I thought this was a snake at first.
So you could actually, you actually saw him in front of you?
That's the guy I saw. That's why I pulled the gun on him. It was a worthless gesture. What the hell could a 45 do? Well, I don't know. I never fired. Although I had some scatter shots.
How far away are you?
The what?
Distance between you and this being.
About from here to the front of the motorhome.
Well, that's like 8, 10 feet?
Yeah. The skin is scaly.
Right.
I think it's the skin. The skin is atomically aligned so they can travel in space. Man can't travel in space today.
How long were you in contact? I mean, you're...
I'd say my two experiences didn't last more than,
if you say 2 or 3 minutes, it was a lot.
Now, I haven't had any other experiences. My only experience was in New Mexico, mm-hmm. not on any other place.
Well, after you got this, a new world, if you can take it, then what happened? Did it just disappear, or did it get in a craft and take off?
I left.
You left.
I went out to my Jeep, got on my radio. I didn't tell the being that I do it. I went up to my radio and got on, and I called my command posts. And I told them, you get green time yet from, Vice Admiral said, yes, they said, it's due coming through any minute, so we could fire again. I told them, when it comes through, I told them, this is an order. Keep our radars down for 10 minutes. And I told them, I repeat the order. To the captain, I told him, keep our radar down for 10 minutes. I'm on my way. Then I get a call back on radio when I was on my way. Mm-hmm. It said, C battery picked up a trajectory going 3,000 miles an hour.
This must have been.
I thought, let me see the tape.
Okay, now, you had these records from Walter Reed on the autopsies, and you talked about the fact they had this. Scaly skin that was put together in a certain fashion, so on. Did they ever come to a conclusion like these were manufactured biological robots or?
The only conclusion was that I think we all came to this together because of the sex organs and the different organs in the lymph systems, lungs, and stomach. But they were, it was a clone.
In ancient times, they call them gigigs, G-I-G-I, G-I-G-I, pretty much, gigigis.
Now, if you go back to the days of the Sumerians, they call them Igis. Yeah. They say they were ferry drivers, what they are. The real ones up there, motherships. Now, no one's ever explored the Sumerian. Sitkin wrote this. Nobody's ever explored the Sumerian civilization. I think the key is there. They disappeared after a while. I think the Sumerian maybe were the mothership. And they tried to wipe out the human race, you know, in those days. But anyway, you got to go back in history and see the Sumerians, mm-hmm. what they say. And they called them Igis, I-G-I-G-I-S.
You think they were manufactured for space travel or time travel or something?
Well, I think they were manufactured as servants. Now, my theory is, what do they want? Here, do they want a new race? Because one of the strangest things, as far as I'm concerned, is on these mutilations, they took the sex genes. And the nearest thing to the human sex organ are cattle sex organs. And by the way, they cut those with a type of laser cutter, which didn't even cut through the cells.
Cut around them, yeah.
Cut around the cells. That's how good, how perfect it was.
Hey,
we have no such thing. A handheld cutter, a laser, we have no such thing.
Man, you have just this archive of never before seen. It was the first time that he ever talked on camera. And, you know, we've got a few clips of that here, but what was that like? In that sometimes people tell you something that your mind, you're like, okay, I get it, reverse engineering. But I met an alien in a cave? Like, how? What does that do to your brain?
Yeah, that stretches a little bit. You're wondering, okay, is this guy a kook? So, you know, leaving with Hal Putoff and Alexander, Colonel Alexander, we fly back. What do you make of that? Well, let's dig into his background, see what we can confirm, which is what John did. He went to some National Archives in D.C., spent a couple of weeks putting a background report together. And then we told Robert Bigelow about this. He says, let's bring him out to Las Vegas, which we did a few weeks after we had gone to Florida. He comes out, meets with NIDS folks. Dr. Jacques Vallée flies in. We sit there in a room, and they put Corso through his paces over a course of about 4 or 5 hours. And again, I sat there and recorded not very well on this little tiny camera, and we got a lot of that footage, so we can play some of that as well. The following clips are from a never-before-seen interview with Philip J. Corso, taken in 1996 in Las Vegas, Nevada. Present in this interview with me were Robert Bigelow, Hal Puthoff, Colonel John B. Alexander, and Jacques Vallée.
Well, I picked up the trajectory sometime in the morning. What happened was this. My boys called me and they said, we picked up something traveling pretty fast. We don't know the speed. We don't know how, but we've got a trajectory. And it came, the boys told me, and the tape showed this, that the thing came this direction. It came this direction and fell. The trajectory looked like this. So I called White Sands. I told him, not a white lie, I told him, say, I lost an ARCAT. Did you pick up any trajectory? They said, yes. So they gave me trajectory, and it matched this one. Later on, I found out at home, and it picked up something. Same day. So when I picked up the trajectory, I called my pilot, because I had a little airfield up there. I had 5 airplanes. And there was a 2-seater on those grasshoppers.
I remember this bit. He's a bit of a cheeky bugger. He bluffed his way so he could get there himself. Yeah, here we go. I'm pretty sure this is the one.
It was my private. So I called the pilot, and we used to take caliche, and the boys would go pick up all the they used to go in it and wet it and roll it. We'd like concrete, and that was our airfield. So I went out with the pilot, and we looked down. We saw something shiny, and the pilot asked me, what is it? I told him I'd make one of the boosters. But I knew it wasn't a booster. Because I'd seen boosters from the airplane. I used to fly around a lot out there. And White Sands knew I flew around out there. Then I figured I should start bombing. I got to go out on the ground. So my command car was no good, and I want to take a Jeep. So I called Floyd Bliss to send me up a command car. Remember those big command cars? And it was perfect for the desert. Because when I got the command car, they sent it right up. It took about 3 or 4 hours to get there. So I told my boys, Boys, I'm leaving. I'll be back in a couple hours. So I took off in the command car. I was driving myself. And I took my gun, a water bottle, electronic equipment, and a compass. And I took off. And this is the route that I took. Now, I don't know if exactly this far, but I passed Trinity Site. It was south of me. And I caught right across country in the desert. Because a big command car could do that. I couldn't do it in the sometimes in the Jeep, with those big wheels on that thing. And I cut straight across, and I had the coordinates. I had a pretty good map. And when I looked to check the coordinates, I got near there. I got my binoculars down, and there was nothing there. I couldn't see anything. I figured, what the hell? And I kept checking the coordinates. I figured, this is the right place. Then this damn thing appeared. And right away, I'm in the desert by myself. Am I seeing things? Is this a hallucination? Because I'm out here all by myself, 110 degrees was. I still remember that day because I had this moment. Oh, the damn thing appeared. Then I timed it. I had my wristwatch on. I think it was, I have it in here. took just a few minutes and disappeared again. Right away, I start figuring, boy, I am going a bit nutty. This must be an hallucination because these things don't happen. Damn thing appeared, disappeared, and appeared again. And I figured, I'm not going off. And I stopped a piece from it, about 200 or 300 yards. And I'm not going near that damn thing. What if it appears over top of me? No one know what the hell happened to me. So then it disappeared and appeared again. So I got enough nerve to go on. I picked up a rock and threw it in there. Picked up two rocks and sagebrush. And I took off again. The damn thing appeared. When it disappeared, I went back out. The rock was crushed and the sagebrush was flattened out. I think, well, this thing has a body. Maybe I'm not dreaming. Because at that stage, I still thought I was seeing things. And I'm telling you, I might have been a combat officer and had medals, but I was a little bit scared. I mean, what the hell am I up against here? What is this? Being all by yourself, too. What did I have? A lousy pistol, 45. I figured that's a pea shooter or something like that. So the next time it appeared, I got enough nerve to go and put my hand on it. It was smooth and cold. And there I started to wonder, it's 110 degrees out here. With the sun hitting, the metal thing can't be cool. My command car, you could hardly put your hand on the steering wheel. You don't want to stay out in that sun a little bit. And this thing was cold. Then I'm sitting there wondering if I'm hallucinating, I better go back. And all at once, my compass starts to spin. And the instrument went crazy. So I gunned the command car in reverse, took off in reverse. My motor died. And the thing started to, it wasn't vibrated, it started to shake some. And all at once, it went up like this, turned on its side, and zoom. And like I, and by the way, there were two colors up here, a blue and an orange. And when it, the way I described it, like yesterday, a balloon. Take a balloon, and when you blow up, enlarge that, and a balloon behind it, half a balloon. The thing went in sideways this way, and went in that balloon part, and it seemed like the opening. I went in there, and I saw two colors, and then I was standing there like a dummy, and I was looking at the blue sky. There was nothing here. It just disappeared.
What was the approximate size, and what was the shape of the craft?
I say it was, for my observation, it was tilted a little bit on the ground. I'd say maybe 30 feet.
But and the configuration, the shape, what would that
do? Just like a saucer, like two pie pans on top of each other. No dome or anything. At least I didn't see any dome or any bottle.
And when it turned on its side, mm-hmm. It didn't tilt like this.
It turned on the side.
Any sound associated with it?
Was it?
Any sound?
No sound at all. Nothing. Quiet.
So the 30 feet was like a diameter?
Diameter.
How about the height?
It was just like two pie pans. Yeah, now, at the end, when I was laying on the side, I could reach up and touch the end of the saucer when I put my hand on it.
How much of the saucer was above you when you touched it?
It was laying something like this.
Was the top of it approximately your head?
I could see the top. It was above my head, the other end of it.
Did you have the feeling at any time that you could have gone inside?
No. No. Never entered my mind. In fact, what was in my mind, get the hell out of here.
When it did take off, how close were you to it at that time?
Oh, my car had stalled. I'd say 200 yards, maybe.
A couple hundred yards?
Yeah, because I gunned the command car in reverse. And it was the command car, I didn't get closer about 50 feet to it, and I had walked up. I gunned my command car in reverse, backwards. And then the engine stalled. Maybe electromagnetism might have affected the engine, I don't know. But anyway, it stalled. I thought maybe it was me hitting the gas and the gear shift wrong and stalled it. I stalled it. Maybe the thing stalled it, I don't know. And then just disappeared. And I made up my mind. I had orders on my desk for combat battalion, which I've wanted all my life. I'm not going to jeopardize this by trying to tell them anything. They won't believe me anyway. They tell me to shut up.
That's right.
So I told them, I explained to me what I saw. So they both went through an explanation. The second one, the older fellow, he said, you had a tremendous experience. He said, that more likely was a time machine was malfunctioning. They had to correct it. And the first, then he told me that what he thought the propulsion system was because of the way my equipment acted. And he said, it's a magnetic type propulsion system. He said, your instruments went wild. Yeah, just before it took off. He said they were trying to adjust their time sequence. So that's, and the Germans, they didn't say that was good. They thought that was one of Wilbur Smith. He said, you have experienced one of the great events that happened in the world. I told him, well, I didn't think it was any great event. He said, well, you did. And that's what Wilbur Smith told me. When I was Inspector General of the 7th Army, Trudeau came to Germany. And Heidelberg sent for me to meet him at the airplane. He wanted to meet me. And I met him at the airplane. He was over there on some sort of inspection tour. Lieutenant General knew they thought the red carpet. He came with his wife. And the first time he'd seen me in uniform for years, they didn't recognize me. He only recognized me. He stopped in the reception line, came over. And his wife came over and I stood there. So he said, Phil, he said, I might be taking over R&D if you're coming with me. I told him, that you'd like to. And he said, well, I'll send for you when I go back. Later, you know, when he became, he wasn't chief R&D then. So I came back, and they made me air defense advisor to the Maryland National Guards, senior air defense. That was the first time that the National Guard had somebody with experience. I made them pass their NORAD and their other inspections. And I was defending the Washington area. So then a letter came from Chief Army Personnel asking for my assignment to the Pentagon. So the Adjutant General of State, old record, called me. Major General, he's the Adjutant General of the State of Maryland. He said, Colonel, he said, I got an order here, your assignment. So he had to release me. Once there's a job like that, they can't just pull you. The Pentagon just can't pull you. You're subject to the whims of the State Adjutant General. So he said, I told him, well, this sounds like General Trudeau, my old boss. He wants me back. He's an R&D. So General Record was pretty nice. He's an old fellow. He's over 80. And he told me, he said, I won't stand in your way. Call the general and tell him I'll release you tomorrow. I walked in Trudeau's office, saluted him. He looked up. He said, you aboard, Phil? Come, yes, sir. He said, only instructions he ever gave me. He said, watch things for me, Phil. The rest I don't understand. And that was the only orders he ever gave me. Watch things for him, the rest don't understand. I ended up with 9 clearances. They're both top secret.
Did you have discussions, though, as you were doling out this material?
All the time.
You ever discussed the implications of what it was?
I went into Trudeau's office one day. There's 2 men there. And he said, we can talk freely with these 2 men, Phil. They were from North American Rockwell. And this thing here... 2 men came in from North American Rockwell, and they were given this.
Now they know where it came from.
It came in from my files.
Yeah, but did the Rockwell people, were they told?
We didn't know. We let them, Bell Labs, we let them think. They thought that it's just we stole from the Russians. We let them think that. But the hell, that was all right. Let them think it, just so they have it and do some work. They did a good job.
Was there a potential problem if you gave them potentially advanced material, told them it's Soviet, that they would say, oops, the Soviets are way ahead of us?
Then we would watch it. A lot of times it was my job to go to see how it was coming. I'd go to the companies, North American, TRW, Westinghouse, GE, but we had listed as number one crooked. We had listed contractors reliable and how crooked they were. They never knew we had this. By the military organization in the early 50s was CIC answer operationally to the G2. They didn't operate on their own. When they got that G4 at Roswell, a CIC man that disappeared. He had to hand that to G2, his operational chief. G2 would pass it to the Pentagon, to G2 in the Pentagon. Our intelligence had no R&D function. So they would pass it to R&D. In those days, R&D was under logistics. Power logistics, secondary mission, no one cared about. Logistics was logistics, it wasn't R&D. Yet it was assigned to R&D. It was assigned to them. In 1959, Trudeau changed it all over. Took all R&D put under one head, Fort Monmouth and all those places. The universities, the laboratories, and put them under one head, one chief. And all this stuff was inherited. And when he created for me the Foreign Technology Division, he created that to give us a focal point where all foreign developments could come into. They'd all come into me. I not only mean space, but I'm talking about the depleted uranium, helicopter arming, anti-aircraft stuff from South Africa, the toll from France. Those all would come into me. And also, anything like the flying saucer stuff would come into me.
Other than that first batch, was there more?
No. I never got anything more in the first batch.
Were there reports in the files from when they had originally been looked at?
Somebody had done something with them, because there's reports in there.
Do you remember which labs had written the reports?
Well, the labs weren't ours then, in those days. And I remember what Paula Reed told me and Lincoln Lab told me. He said, do you remember your instructions were always not to keep any copies, to send everything back? And they had their, that's why they couldn't find anything at Lincoln. They said, your orders were to give everything back. And those were our instructions. What this would cause, all weapons would be obsolete.
Do you ever have a guess about where they were from?
Well, we tried to, but we never came up with anything different where they were from.
If it's a time machine,
anywhere, yes.
Could be us. That's the worst possibility.
That's the worst one. Did you ever feel like you had to brief somebody else in the political center of potential danger, or did you just carefully try to prepare?
No, I would never agree. Oh, I did talk about this very thoroughly with John McCormick, because we were pretty close friends. After Kennedy died, he was number two.
I don't think Jacques has heard the story about the Russian base, what happened to that Russian base, and I'm curious about how the information came to you.
CIA and the intercept. You know, we had a system that was watching, localize all atomic detonations. And that was part of it. And the other was a CIA report. Somewhere in my papers, I have a copy of a CIA report. And that happened. And there was 200 scientists killed. So they were lying to you. There were two ways. I say CIA got the report and the atomic monitoring that we had worldwide.
And did the report contain an explanation about what caused the explosion?
No one knew. But there was UFO activity in the area before that.
So in the files that you had, there was a report on an autopsy?
Yeah. See, the Walter Reed Laboratory was ours. We financed it. It belonged to R&D. It was our laboratory. It wasn't belonged to Walter Reed. We financed the thing.
Yeah, it's still got us.
It's still there?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's still there.
Were there photos with this report?
No. Oh, I had one photo, but it was pretty messed up. You couldn't tell much from it.
Of an alien body?
It was pretty messed up.
Did they preserve any samples? They must have preserved tissue samples.
I really don't know.
Genetic material.
I don't think maybe the Air Force did. I don't think the Army ever did. I never saw a report on any preservation of anything like that. Maybe they did, but I never saw any.
Okay. Well, what was reported in the autopsies?
Well, the thing that interested me was the lymph gland part and digestive system, which didn't exist, and the brain lobe. Was his number one interest in this movie, by the way. When they open up the brain, they show the lobe if you look close enough. And the sex organs were all, they called it antropoid.
So atrophy?
Lack of use.
Right?
Yeah, atrophy.
Atrophy.
Is that the way you put it?
A-N-T-R-O-P-H-I-E.
Yeah.
Atrophy.
They were lack of use. Sex organs were almost non-existent. So these are the things that really interested me. That's where I saw that glove, you know, with the suction cups on.
That was a glove?
Yeah, it was a glove. There was no fingers. They only had four fingers on. And now that was unusual. I don't know. No thumb. I don't know how they used it then. But they disappeared. Naturally, nothing could be said because these things didn't exist as far as the government was concerned.
Right.
There was no talk about what happened. Couldn't say the UFO was gone or bombs were gone because national policy was that they didn't exist. How can you talk? How can something be burned up in an explosion and fire when it didn't exist? Same way we played the game. We played the same game. R&D, we played a game. Nobody can investigate because we can investigate something that doesn't exist to put out an order, cover all it. What the hell are they going to put out an order to cover? They don't know what the hell to cover. I don't think there was any cover up. I couldn't trace one. I never knew one. I had all the clearances. I was in the spook business. Our operation, we didn't want, we had good reason not to put out. Not only that, didn't we put it out? But we didn't have any PR function.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to put it out. It wasn't our job to put things like this out. And we didn't want to do it anyway. We didn't cover it up. We want to give it to industry and American people, but it couldn't be done with the climate of opinion and the way things were, with the political situation and all the debunkers and all the skeptics. This UFO problem has never been handled right. Never have. There hasn't been a real intelligent study on UFOs that bring in all the factors. If you would tell me right now, set up a plan to cover up the UFO thing, what the hell would I write? How would I approach it? And what would I say to cover up? Well, what Smith said, don't answer any questions because you don't have the answers. So what are they going to cover?
Okay, well then...
there never has been a study made of it.
For our going forward then, it would actually be nice to know that there isn't some dedicated group of people who do not want to get information out. So if that's the case, then... it ought to be possible for us to come up with a plan to help get information out or channel information out or channel out technological.
Now, let's say that there's a group like this in here in my day.
Okay.
And you came up to us. You wouldn't have gotten anything. We weren't talking to protect ourselves. Not because of you or because of him or because of him. But the thing was, we don't even talk about it. We go ahead and do our job because we got to cover our tracks if we want to operate 100%. So we can't let anybody know or talk about this thing.
So that was a second recording that you did with Colonel Corso. Man, I'm glad that you picked up that camera, even if it's shitty footage. You know, that's so cool to get that testimony documented.
Yeah. And, again, I think some of the claims seem to stretch the bounds of reality. You know, they went pretty far. It would be hard under the best of circumstances to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that fiber optics came from, inspired by these strange materials that were picked up in the desert outside Roswell, New Mexico. But that's what he says.
Did Colonel Corso have to get permission in any way to talk about the things that he did in his book?
He just went for it.
He just went for it.
Yeah. You know, I think he had, as I recall, he had a relationship with Strom Thurmond, who had served in the U.S. Senate longer than anybody, I think. And in fact, Strom Thurmond originally wrote the foreword to his book. Now, after his Strom Thurmond staff realized, holy cow, this is a UFO book, they wanted to withdraw it. But, you know, the deed had been done already. The following year is when the Roswell book came out. The day after Roswell, it's on the 50th anniversary. It was a huge bestseller. And as a part of that, Corso did other interviews with other media. And he came back to Las Vegas and met with me. And we did another interview for KLAS-TV it's all over the internet now, but maybe we can play a little chunk of it.
But I even told you, I think, that I was not interested in seeing UFOs. I was all interested in what was in those UFOs.
Anyone familiar with UFO lore will recognize at least some of what Phil Corso says. Reports of crashed saucers, recovered alien bodies, a government cover-up. But in 50 years of UFO controversy, no one of his rank or stature has ever publicly proclaimed this level of inside knowledge. Corso was an intelligence officer inside the Eisenhower White House, assigned to the National Security Council. He also served as Inspector General of the 7th Army and commanded the 1st Nuclear Battalion in Germany. His credentials are impeccable, his record spotless, but did he really handle wreckage from a flying saucer?
They came from a flying saucer.
How do you know that?
Because they were marked in the files as coming from New Mexico.
Roswell.
Yeah, Roswell.
Roswell, of course, is the most famous alleged UFO crash site in history, a story which the Air Force has tried to bury once and for all. Corso says that Army Research and Development not only had pieces of wreckage in its possession, but also reports and photos from an autopsy of an alien cadaver.
I had the reports. See, the Walter Reed, the laboratory of Walter Reed, was our laboratory. We financed it. He was part of the guidance system, or it, whatever it is, because it has no sex organ or thing. It was part of the guide system. That's why we failed in propulsion.
Corso says the Army kept the material and bodies secret because of potential enemies within the U.S. government, interests which might take over the program and destroy the reputations of those involved. He thinks the secrets are still being kept, but doesn't know by whom. Twice in the past few years, Corso has testified before Congress concerning secret activities within the Eisenhower White House. He's been thoroughly checked out and his information confirmed. But his most sensational allegation is one which American industry isn't going to like at all. Corso says the Army spoon-fed recovered alien technology to American industry, resulting in some of our greatest technological advances.
The number one was the integrated circuit. Number two in importance was laser, because I had some laser instruments also. Then fiber optics.
Such sensational claims have invited harsh criticism, but Corso doesn't mind. He names others who knew what he knows, and it's an exclusive club, he says.
General Marshall, General Trudeau, General MacArthur, Von Braun, Olbert, Wilbur Smith from the... I'm in good company. That's the company I'd rather be in. Those cool.
So we're kind of living in a different world now where we have to look back at what people told us before. It dawns on me that here's a guy saying reverse engineering of UFOs was real. What happened in Roswell was real. He's a high-ranking military guy. He just goes for it and puts this out. You wonder if he would seed his own story with things that are a little bit unbelievable as a way to kind of take the heat off of him, like the fact that he said he met a live alien on his own. Or, I mean, who am I to judge? Maybe the guy is a stand-up individual who's telling the truth. I don't know, man.
Remember, he drew me a picture at that first meeting in Florida. In that RV, he drew me a picture of the alien that he said he met. And I think I've still got that image somewhere. And, parts of what he said really were tough to swallow. And it was much different from the version he had first given to me. He gave me an outline of the story he wanted to tell that he had written himself when we were talking about doing a book together. And it was a much more modest telling of the story than the one that eventually came out. That was one of the criticisms of Corso that came out after the book, is that he seems to place himself at the center of every major event of the 20th century. Right. It's a lot of key people. Well, the fact is he was with many of the biggest events of the 20th century, right there in the thick of things with some of the main people who shaped that century.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you wonder if the kind of fish gets bigger with each telling of the story with some of this stuff. But is the core of it true? And again, I just keep going back to the physical hardware. If we have been told directly from people that as they're working on this technology, about every 10 years, they wheel it back out and they try to see if our material science has caught up to replicate any of it. So it makes sense to me that he would be one of these original whistleblowers. And this is a guy we know was a whistleblower when it came to prisoners of war. He's got a great military career. I mean, he just doesn't seem like a liar, right?
I don't think so. That wasn't my impression.
Yeah.
I think that the story did get a lot bigger in the retelling of it 5 years after I first met him. But the core of it is really interesting. He was at the places that he would have needed to be to see the stuff that he claims to have seen. You know, the story about reverse engineering of technology, we know that there's a lack of progress on the propulsion technology. We haven't been able to reproduce anti-gravity mechanisms through using Earth technology or Earth materials. But that doesn't mean we haven't made breakthroughs on other stuff that may have come from the Roswell record or other crashes.
Yeah, even like, you know, the idea of artificial intelligence, you know, there are some people that believe that as we have kind of increased our technical knowledge, that we've gained a lot of information from these reverse engineers. But my question is more, if we had a program that specifically deals with propulsion and power source, like Lazar talked about, Project Galileo. Lazar also said that there are two other programs that he heard about, Project Sidekick, which was a weaponization program, a laser weaponization program. And then he talked about Looking Glass.
Looking Glass.
Looking Glass. And Looking Glass was about the lensing of gravity, you know, space-time differentials, that kind of thing. And I think the power and propulsion was Project Galileo, if I remember. So that's what Bob said. You have to imagine, he also said there were other programs he was sure that dealt with like language or dealt with different aspects, the biological matter. You have to imagine if you have a craft and that craft has biologicals, that you'd have a whole slew of different types of programs. From language to culture to, I don't know, to everything. You'd have to imagine that.
Yeah, and then let's say you're Bell Labs. Do you want to say, this wasn't our idea. We got the idea from some alien stuff that some colonel from the Army dropped off on our doorstep?
Right.
No, because these patents and technologies that developed from that, or developed, are worth billions and billions of dollars.
And also, if you're given actual materials that our military recovered, and there's like, you can't talk about how we gave these to you, what's recovered, but anything you make from it, you can take credit for.
Right.
So that's a whole thing other than financials. Like if you want to keep that secrecy in place, just like how that was all built around the atomic programs, then you're going to keep your mouth shut because that was the deal to begin with. Right.
Remember in an earlier show, we talked about the Russians. And I know I got a lot of crap about this comment, but I had been told by people that we both know, who were in a position to know, that they suspect that the Russians had developed some kind of a weapon based on their recovered alien technology, their crash retrieval program, reverse engineering, that there's some kind of a laser beam type weapon that they have been dying to employ, which might explain some of the provocative encounters we've had with Russian warplanes. And I know that that's a lot to swallow, and I can't prove it conclusively, but that's what we are told by people who have told us other things that we have been able to verify.
Well, we know somebody that worked on a Russian down craft on a laser program, from if we're speaking plainly. And if that's true, that connection between Russia and the United States, where we're both kind of fighting for this technology, I thought it was counterintuitive. But even when Bob Lazar was working out at S4, he talked about this partnership between Russia and the U.S. And he said at some point that ended. At some point there was some revelation that the U.S. had, and they kicked out the Russian counterparts. Now, I thought that was so weird, but when I went and investigated a bunch of people that were looking into cold fusion, before it was called cold fusion, low nuclear energy reaction is what the old timers who worked on it, what they would call it. So a lot of these guys were working on that technology before it even had a name. They all talked to me about UFOs as well. And one thing that really struck me after hearing the Lazar story, they would tell me how in their laboratories, there was always a phone, and that phone connected directly to Russia and their counterparts in Russia. It's super counterintuitive because some of this is during the Cold War. How would scientists from two rival countries in some kind of global, you know, war, basically, at the time?
It was the same with the space mission. You know, Russia would have had to be in some sort of alliance of some degree as well to cover that up for the moon landing, so to speak.
How are they communicating on a scientific level? But it turns out it wasn't just true about UFOs. It was true about things like cold fusion. So once I heard that from people that were in those laboratories, you know, back in the day, that made a lot more sense to me that was going on. It's still counterintuitive, but it's just funny. You find that in real...
I was just thinking, you know, we were talking about whether to jump into the Corso topic or not, and I think with the reverse...
That's the weird thing about the moon landing, too, is that, you know, a lot of us think it's fake, yeah. But they would have had to have shut up Russia, so there must have been some strong collusion, maybe, with through the Freemasons, maybe lodges and things like that, that have hushed it up, you know. It's a high possibility that the bloody thing never even happened. So how many people could lie? Well, obviously, Russia would have known about it. So there has to be something on the higher ranks for sure to do with Russia and America intelligence, so to speak.
Engineering crash saucers being a front burner issue, that maybe folks should revisit this case and look at the book, revisit the interviews that Corso has done. You know, now that we know that Arrow is really digging into this stuff, I'm sure they'll want to know if Corso was what he claimed and whether he is telling the truth or not, and they'll really get to the bottom of it, right?
Some people, I don't know if they know when you're being sarcastic and you say, Arrow is really digging into this. Yeah, Arrow does not seem to be doing what the public wants him to do, which is transparency on the issue. We have seen recently some drops or some archives from different federal agencies. That's great. But the core of the question remains. Have we been reverse? I know we know what we believe to be the answer, but is it publicly going to be said that we have been reverse engineering non-human technology?
Hell no, they're not going to say that. You know, again, I'm a glass.
That's the other thing that I think about it, you know, like this reverse engineering thing. It goes all the way back to actually John Dee back in, I think, 1700s, roughly under the crown of Britain. And he made contact with, I think they call them the Archons. And this is where we come across carbon fibers and things like that. It was a, apparently it goes even back before all this sort of shenanigans that he's talking about at the moment. I forget the exact name of the, what do you call it? Silicon. So these sort of technologies go back to other higher powers, you know, could be tied in with it for sure. But, yeah, we've got Silicon Valley, for instance. This goes back to, even way before this.
It's a half-empty guy. And I've been saying for a long time on this program and in other formats that the closer we get to the goodies, the harder the pushback is going to become. We're seeing it right now. It's unfolding right now in D.C. The pushback against Grush and the other whistleblowers, the pushback on Congress, whether or not there are going to be future hearings or not. You know, we hear conflicting stories about that, but it seems like there, you know, there's some pretty strong statements about and characterizations of Grush, for example, someone who supposedly knows nothing about what they're saying to Congress. We're seeing it in real time, the pushback right now. Heavy-duty lobbying behind the scenes by the aerospace giants and the companies that give out millions of dollars in campaign contributions, it's happening right now.
And, well, we know that there has been a handful of more people that have submitted their statements and their testimony to the Intelligence Community Inspector General, and that has been officially done. They have officially made those. Now, is that going to seep out into the public? Are we going to have that as a public conversation? They're doing an investigation right now. The ICIG is doing an investigation on the claims from these people who, by the way, we've talked with. They have firsthand direct knowledge when it comes to working on these programs. That's what everybody wants to hear. They want to have somebody stand up there in front of Congress, and there will be more hearings come hell or high water. There will be. You know, there's some pit bulls in Congress for us. So here's the deal. Are we going to see somebody sitting there and saying, I worked on an alien spacecraft? You know, people that are not in the public eye, people that nobody knows their name. Are we going to see that? I think we are.
Well, I hope so. And we know people who are willing to do that.
Right.
But they're having second thoughts right now because of some of the statements that have been made by our leaders. Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick saying, I've seen no credible evidence of ET technology or anything beyond the laws of physics. We know what kind of testimony he's received. We know he's got some very specific information about places, exact buildings where this stuff is stashed. Has he gone there to look for it? Because I don't get the feeling that he has. And I know we know the effect that that's had on some of these whistleblowers who are standing by, ready to put their lives and careers and reputations on the line by saying what they know about these reverse engineering programs, and they're hearing this from the guy who's in charge of the Arrow program, it's not something that builds a lot of confidence.
Yeah, and to the best of my knowledge and how I understand it is there are some, I guess you'd say, defense contractors that have parts or elements of a craft, certain things that are just separated to look at. But there are other ones like Lockheed that allegedly have a full craft from a known craft downing or a known Lockheed crash man. Retrieval. Yeah. If that information gets out, there's going to be a lot of eyes on Lockheed. Now, the way this works, and I'm going to go back to a story that I told, I think it was on the Rogan podcast, was there was a guy working on semiconductors or superconductors or something like that. This was in the 70s. All he got was an item, and it was put in front of him, and it was like, hey, try to work on this. Try to tell me. No company he know was making these like this. It was almost 100% efficient. No markings on it. No nothing. Again, a guy not ready to break from the fold, but I got it all documented. So when I get the thumbs up, that story's coming out. There's a lot of people like that. There's another case that you and I are working on that is not, we haven't talked about yet, but there was an individual who's renowned for reverse engineering in other fields. And there was an object that apparently he saw, and he was taken in. I don't want to give too many details because I'm still looking to this, but he was taken in, and he was shown something for, I think, a couple of days and was unable to be helpful in any way because the propulsion system, the energy source of this, was nothing that in his field he would know about. So you hear this. You hear this, that there are individuals pulled out of nowhere just because they're good at something. Like, I don't know, a guy that makes rocket cars and works at Los Alamos. You know, he's pulled into some weird program for a very short amount of time, just kind of given the overview, set to work on it, and then bam, they're out. Never hear from it again. That's what happened to the superconductor, supercapacitor guys. Like, he never got to hear about it again. So they've got these questions that linger for...
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of these people are up in the high things of ranks of technology, and that they got no idea when it comes to certain magnetic fields of magnets and even mercury. I think the bell that the Germans were doing was red mercury. And there's different constructions and different energy levels where you could be the greatest technician of, you know, in your field, but you wouldn't be able to comprehend that second level. It's a bit like you'd have to have a two or three brains sort of together to really work it out and sort it out. Just because someone's a higher up, you know, smarty pants in some field doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be able to work it out unless you're a you know, you probably need a rocket scientist, a highly technical person in their field, and probably, you know, someone into certain energy waves, which is probably more physics, I guess you could call it. Aerodynamics as well would be probably another field. You'd probably need half a dozen at least at the minimum of real people to get this sort of thing around your head, you know, and come together. Just because one person's a certain thing in one field doesn't mean that they're an expert in all of them. And it's like anything in life. Once you get a few of people together, it's amazing the difference it can make. Even a conversation about ideas and opinions. As long as we're willing to listen and, you know, come together with each other. It is so true. Well, we haven't got much left of this. So, and I'm going to clean this one up nice and clean when it ends. Because, I think I'm just going to put this, and then I'll come back in later. I just want to put this up as a general broadcast.
Decades. What did I see? Where is that from? There's not many options.
Well, we know that the Manhattan Project worked with stovepipes. Mm-hmm. People were working on little slices of that project and had no idea how it fit into the bigger picture. So that really does happen. It does. It is a way to move forward on some of these exotic technologies. Colonel Corso tells us that that's exactly what happened with multiple technologies that he helped seed into private industry. It'd be nice if there's a fresh new look into some of his allegations.
Right. And I guess if you're, you know, people, we all have to kind of learn how this works. But if something's like top secret, that's great. But there's compartmentalized special access. So even if you have the right clearance, if you are not part of that they call it a bigot list. I don't know exactly what that word means, but a special list of people that can look into it. And we've heard that people are denied access all the time, even if they're investigating this stuff. So look, it keeps secrets, and that's probably generated from the atomic program. We wanted to protect this secret at all costs. So that architecture that was put in place during the atomic era, I think is the same architecture that's hiding the UFO truth to people.
Well, big secrets can be kept. Big secrets are being kept. It's our job to try to expose them.
It is. Thanks, man.
Done. Signed, sealed, and delivered. Well, my friends, I hope you got something out of that one. But I'm going to end this one because I think that was great. Go check out my other one, The Man That Went Into Area 51, if you're up that sort of like line of thought or, you know, thinking. You might find that really good. And, wow. Lot to take in, guys. A lot to take in. And I've got this song that keeps coming on somehow in the background. It's really bizarre. Yeah, it's really bizarre. All right, guys, I don't know where it comes from. I'm going to keep rebooting this thing because music and all sorts of crazy stuff, as you can hear now. It's just kicked in. Yeah. What a trip. Well, from all the UFO ones, that's the one that I really wanted to cover because this is Mr. C comes across a lot of, you know, legitimate dots that he's actually was there. He wasn't a hearsay or out in the wilderness as, you know, someone making up a story. He was rubbing shoulders with some high people, you know, in governments and military. And I thought that was, I don't usually go down that little woohoo trail, but I thought it was fascinating to publish. And so I thought, this would be a good one. This would be a good one. I actually nearly done it on my last show, and I remembered it. And it's funny, there's some things in there that I remember from research that came back to me, even about, there was something I said just before he said it earlier. I forget what it was now. Yeah, things are a little bit fuzzy this time of the night. But, there's some things in there that connect dots with other things that I've heard, you know, unless they're parroting him, maybe. That's a high possibility. Or using him as an example and then building their template around him, you know. These things can happen, unfortunately. But that's the real McCoy, you know, UFO shit. Like, that's the real source shit. That's like the person that actually, you know, was there. And in that sort of area or field of work, you'd at least give him a little bit of, a tilt of the hat to say, this shit might be freaking real, man. This shit might just be bloody real. Yeah. I mean, it's a very controversial topic for sure, you know, in all sorts of arenas, you know. But just the think of it, even go back to, like, the Bible with Enoch and that. I often wonder quite sometimes if they're not from another outer land that we don't know about or inner earth. I think that's another high possibility, another rabbit hole to go down for sure. Not so much that they're actually out there, they're actually here, you know. They evolved here. They're just on a different level to us. It'd be like if we went to the Amazon now, you know, with our helicopters and planes and shit, and they'd be like, fucking, what the hell is this, you know? Freak them out. Yeah. Lots of stuff to think about. Well, anyway, guys, I hope you got something out of it. I'll shut it down. I'll start another show very soon. Yeah. Take care.
But I'm only going to get this one chance.
Something's wrong. I can feel it.
It's just a feeling I've got. Like something's about to happen. But I don't know what. If that means what I think it means, we're in trouble. Big trouble. And it'd be as bananas as you say.